Hello there, football fans. It is August the 27th. It's Champions League draw day. It's a Soccer Central podcast. I'm James Sharman. I love the Champions League draw day. So exciting. So much hope for the future. And then, as we know, within a few weeks, it comes crashing down around most teams and they realise how very mediocre they are. But for one day at least, it's like Christmas for these Champions League teams. We'll get to this draw at some point in today's podcast. It's just me today, but we're joined by a couple of really great guests. Thomas Rongen will be here later on in the show. TR, as you well know, good friend of the show. A journeyman football coach, you could say. He's been there, done it all. Big personality, great guy, and is out looking for a new job. He was let go by the Tampa Bay Rowdies last week, and we'll get the inside scoop from TR about football management and just what makes a football manager drive forward, because it's such a stressful job and at some point you're going to get fired, right? So we'll ask TR all about that. But to start with, we're heading to sunny Vancouver. John Molinaro, my partner in crime, rather than being stuck in a sweaty box of a studio today, he's sweating himself, I'm sure, on a beach in Vancouver, right, J-Mo?
That's right, yeah.
You know, I saw you tweet out a picture actually about maybe an hour ago, maybe more than that, and you're lying on a beach,
yeah,
reading a soccer book. But I've got to ask you though, the big question: some really questionable cutoffs you're wearing.
Oh, come on! Charlie.
No, they're freshly cut. Right? They were freshly cut, weren't they?
I would say about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Yeah.
Really. You got to wash them more often, yeah, and get the fraying of the edge there at the bottom. I mean, I'm not saying the Daisy Dukes, but they're not far off. Check out J-Mo's Twitter feed, at John Molinaro.
I'm never coming on the show again with this.
Hey, it could be worse, man. It could be a Speedo.
That's true.
Yeah, although, of course, the night's still young over there, right? So perhaps by the evening, you'll be rocking some kind of mankini, and you can let us enjoy that imagery for a while on Twitter. J-Mo, you're over there for last night's Amway Championship final, the Voyagers Cup. Vancouver, they beat Montreal 2-0. They move on as champions 4-2 over both legs. Finally, Vancouver get it done. Canadian champions. Is a club relieved? I mean, you spoke to the players and Carl Robinson, the coach. Is it a sense of relief or is it a sense of, all right, the job's just starting now?
It's a little bit of both, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think there's no doubt there's relief because, you know, they had finished runners-up in 5 of the previous 6 seasons. It had become a running joke about all the ways that they had figured out to manage to lose this tournament. And, you know, Carl Robinson and a lot of the players, you know, they freely admitted earlier this week that it irked them that they hadn't won this, because everyone keeps kind of bringing up their futility in the competition. And the fact that, you know, they had to watch 2 years ago as Montreal won the trophy at BC Place after Vancouver fell apart in the second leg. I don't think there's any question that they wanted this. They wanted to sort of bury all this talk about them being chokers and not being able to win the big one. So a sense of relief, there's no question about it. But it's also a sense of, you know, they talked about, one of the common themes that, you know, Robinson and the players talked about in the post game yesterday was about the starting point, how they're trying to build something at the club in terms of a culture where they can continually and repeatedly, you know, in the conversation for trophies and for being the best team in the league. So, you know, this is the first major trophy that they've won since coming in MLS. They're going to qualify now for next year's Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League. They're already playing in this year's Champions League. They're one of the best teams in the Western Conference. They're going to, you know, potentially challenge for the community or for the first place in MLS. So I think it's a starting point for them, and while at the same time they were relieved, I think they see this as the beginning point of something, you know, hopefully that'll be something bigger for them.
That's the one phrase I keep hearing from, you know, be it journalists, other players, you know, about Vancouver and about what Robbo's doing there, and that's culture change, and he's building a culture at that club. This is his first trophy as a manager in professional soccer. Is this star very much on the rise?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I don't think there's any question. I think he's one of the sort of brightest young managers in Major League Soccer. And I think you talk to any sort of general manager across the league, and I'm sure they'd love to have someone of Carl Robinson's like him. I think he's just a real sort of great man's manager. Really gets on well with the players, but at the same time challenges them and holds them accountable. Delight to deal with, you know, from a player perspective, from a media perspective. And his star is very much on the rise. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, in another couple years he gets an opportunity to go on to, say, Seattle or L.A. or, like, one of the big, really big teams in MLS. That's not suggesting Vancouver isn't a great side, because they are. But you got to think, if Bruce Arena suddenly leaves, you know, the L.A. Galaxy in a few years, that Robinson, if he kind of keeps going on this trajectory that he is, that he might get a shot at, you know, that gig. And then from there, I wouldn't be surprised if eventually he goes back to England, perhaps on the championship or with a Premier League team, because he's really proving himself to be, you know, one of the best managers in Major League Soccer.
So one thing that's great about Major League Soccer is that so many young players, you know, retire and are getting chances to manage in this league. There's so many of them. That's part of the reason why there's so few firings and how there's been no firings so far this year. A lot of clubs are really, you know, throwing their future behind, you know, young, inexperienced managers and letting them cut their teeth in this league. And I think Robbo's a prime example. It'd be fascinating to say what, you know, what he does in the next few years. He's very much a family man, is Emerson, and he loves Vancouver. And his family loves Vancouver. So obviously, you know, there's that career ambition. He's got a real fire in his heart too, in his belly as a player. Certainly we saw that. You know, we're very serious. But from a coaching standpoint, it'd be interesting to see what he does the next few years. And if that call does come from overseas at some point, you know, it'd be quite the calling, I would think. And obviously he's got family back there still. So it'd be interesting to see. But from a footballing standpoint, this team obviously playing really well right now. And Russell Tybutt, good Canadian content there, wins the George Gross Memorial Trophy for the tournament's MVP.
Yeah, and that was a nice story, because I think, you know, like a lot of coaches coming into this tournament, they're often scrutinized and chastised about, you know, well, or, you know, are you going to play any Canadians in these games? And, you know, Russell Tybutt, sad to say, he was the only Canadian who started yesterday. There was one who came on for Montreal as a sub. You'll forgive me, my memory is failing me, who came on. But it's only two Canadians featured. So it was nice to see a guy like Russell Tybutt not only start but feature prominently in this game, and also, you know, win the tournament MVP. And, you know, it's interesting in that, you know, you'd like to see more Canadians sort of play in this tournament, because if it's a Canadian Cup, and if what's the purpose if not to showcase Canadian talent? So, there was an interesting article by Mark Weber out here in the Vancouver province, where he suggested that it might be time to bring in a quota for the Canadian AM Championship, in terms of, you know, you having to have, you know, five guys on the roster for these cup games and three on the pitch at all times or something like that. I don't think that's a bad idea, because as I said, I mean, this is the Amway Canadian Championship. It's supposed to be showcasing Canadian talent. Otherwise, you know, what are we doing? So
sure, but at the same time, you don't want to dilute the tournament either. You know, you want to see the best players playing. And these clubs make their minds up as far as what they're doing going forward.
Well, that's true, James. I would agree. Obviously, you do want to see the best players. But again, I think, you know, it's a Canadian Cup. It's a Canadian tournament where, you know, the Canadian teams are all the focus is on them. They're playing each other. I would think in a setting like that, you know, we could get away with, you know, having a quota. I'm not suggesting that that's for MLS, and that's a battle that I don't think is, I mean, there is a quota, but it's, you know, it's pretty minimal. But I think for these Canadian Cup games, I think it really behooves, you know, the CSA to look at that and think about introducing, you know, something about a quota system.
I get it, but at the same time, the big lure of this tournament isn't the fact that you're Canadian champions, right? There's four teams, let's be honest here, right? It is the fact that you're going to get a chance to qualify for the Champions League, right? That's the big carrot, surely.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, I think on the surface it certainly looks like that, but I do wonder if the teams almost see, you know, the CONCACAF as I don't want to say an annoyance, but there's no question that those games, the way that the CONCACAF Champions League is set up, that it comes during the second half of the season when these clubs are going to be involved in playoff battles as the regular season comes down to a stretch. So you know, now you're adding in extra fixtures, and, you know, oftentimes you got to get on a plane and go to places like Honduras or El Salvador or somewhere in Central America. Yeah. So I wonder if they almost, it's almost like a double-edged sword about, yeah, it's great to play in the CONCACAF Champions League, but there's all these extra fixtures coming at the worst possible time.
I see that, Jamie. I see that. But look at Europe, how many games they're playing, right? Over here, they're not playing that many games, right? So, yeah, maybe it's a bit of a, you know, an issue late in the season. It's not that convenient. But really, I mean, how many games are they really playing? And I think what Montreal showed last year especially was, if you can get there and you have a really good run in that tournament, you get a lot of press, a lot of exposure, and it's something pretty special. I mean, that big game last year in Montreal was one of the greatest moments in Canadian soccer history, it's fair to say, right?
Oh, hey, like, I'm with you. I'm just saying, I think that's how they might view it. I mean, I take a totally different view. I think it's great that, you know, the CONCACAF Champions League is the carrot there. And I think, yeah, you're quite right. I mean, that game in Montreal between the Impact and Club America in early this year in April or May, I mean, I was there for that. And that 60,000 in the Olympic Stadium, I mean, that was fantastic. I mean, and I've covered, you know, games all over the world. And that was one of the best sort of fan atmosphere environments that I've ever been to. So I'm not discounting the lure of the CONCACAF Champions League at the, but I do think there has to be a balance struck about in terms of getting more Canadians on the field in this tournament, at least, because, you know, we're always complaining about the state of the Canadian national team, right? So, I mean, I think every little bit helps. If you can get these Canadian players playing in these cup games, it might not make, you know, the biggest difference, but I think it'll make some difference.
Sure, sure. Listen, before I let you get back to your bronzing, got to ask you quickly, Champs League draw today, your boys, Juventus, joining Group D, along with Man City, Sevilla, and Borussia Mönchengladbach. Youch! Tough one.
Yeah, very tough one. I was very disappointed with a draw. Is it just me, or does Man United seem to always get the sweetheart draws?
Every single year. Yeah,
okay, so
yeah, they walk through the group for a reason, because there's clearly bias with the balls.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm not alone in that. I'm not.
No,
crazy.
And but listen, yeah. Peter Schmeichel was involved in the draw, right? So that speaks for itself.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And maybe Juve got a tough draw because Paolo Maldini was involved too, right? So
yeah, there you go. Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
But no, I mean, look, it's a tough draw. There's no question. You know, even beyond Man City, there's, you know, Sevilla, the defending, you know, Europa League champions, and Borussia Mönchengladbach is a very strong German team. But you know what? It's going to make our victory all of the sweeter when we top that group. So I'm quite looking forward to it. I think there's going to be some great games there.
J-Mo, drink some more pina coladas, get some more sun on those awfully white, pale, pasty limbs, and we'll see you back here real soon.
Sounds good, James.
Thanks, mate. That is John Molinaro. Please follow John on Twitter, at John Molinaro, just to see the pictures of those shorts. They are something pretty special, pretty special. Well, listen, I mentioned the Champions League there. We'll get to that in more depth later on, but for Borussia Mönchengladbach to be pulled in Group D, with Juve, Man City, Sevilla, it sounds like it's unfair and it's rough, but for them, I think it's fantastic. This is a big German club with incredible history who had a really good year last year to get this far in the Champions League. No one knows about them apart from their funny name, but they are going to get some exposure now against two of the biggest clubs in the world and a Sevilla team under Unai Emery who might be the dark horse in this year's Champions League. So yeah, Borussia Mönchengladbach might crash out after six games in the Champions League group phase, but that's okay. We'll know who they are after this year's tournament. And for that, I'm happy to see Borussia Mönchengladbach drawn in Group D with Juve, Man City, and Sevilla. Well, moving on, as I mentioned earlier in today's show, I'm delighted to welcome our next guest. His name is Thomas Rongen, one of our good friends here at Sportsnet. Been around the block in Football STR, one of the good guys in the game, one of the most knowledgeable and, dare I say it, one of the most cultured men I know, not just in football, but in life overall. TR, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine, Sharms. And you are with Kurt Lars. But I still put you above Kurt Lars. The voice of soccer in Canada, my man. I'm telling you.
Thanks, Bill. I'll tell Kurt you said that as well. I appreciate that. So listen, mate, let's get through this quickly. It's been a rough week for you. You were let go by the Tampa Bay Rowdies last week. I've been following the story a lot on Twitter. The fans are not happy about it. It seemed to come out of nowhere. You had a really good first half of this season. You'd really embraced this team as well, it seemed. You know, you were so active on Twitter, on social media with this club. Were you surprised when it went down?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly was, Sharms. I've been there, done that before, and in most or pretty much all cases, it was all football related. You know, in this business, Sharms, you lose more than you win. You're susceptible to lose your job. You know, I mean, in some cases, Ben Olsen goes 4-whatever 2 years ago, stays in the job, and then wins the championship, and then does well. So those are unique circumstances, but normally, you are judged by your results. In this case, yes, we had a rough start of the fall season, but still in fourth place, which is playoff contention. Top four teams in the NASL will go through. So philosophical differences was quoted. And, you know as well as I do, Sharms, nowadays with lawyers and language, that was... The reason I was given that I was dismissed from my job. I'm so happy to see that fans through social media, but also on game day, showed their respect. I love the club, really. I did. I love the fans, and I'm saddened. I can't see this project through with a fairly new team, not an expansion team, but in terms of expansion team, 24 new players, still in fourth place, and building something that could sustain this club for many years as a contender. So that's sad. You're going to move on again.
Now, I know you can't get into too many details, but you mentioned there were philosophical differences. Do you think that, you know, whether they let you go or otherwise, it was becoming untenable anyway?
Probably. You know, I mean, in some situations, even if it's tough, it's still healthy. You have support. There's good dialogue. It's all about improving the team. In this case, it was not. And the mere fact that the owner made himself a general manager speaks volumes, obviously, about the direction that he wants to go in. Somebody who bought the team 2 years ago had never seen a soccer ball, you know, give you some indication of what the atmosphere within the club was.
Well, yeah, that speaks for itself. Listen, you mentioned before, this isn't your first rodeo. You've been around, I think, 15 clubs now, you know, in your career. Not as a player, but as either an administrator, as a coach, as a GM. Do you take it personally when you lose your job? I mean, yeah, obviously it's part of the job is losing your job in football, right? But do you take it personally?
Yes, you do, Sharms. Anytime, just like I did with Toronto FC as the director of the academy, I felt a great need to produce players for the first team and took that very seriously. Build the great staff with the Denny Dicchios of the world, and then when you get let go, there is this angst, this not good feeling about the fact that you thought you performed well and you get let go due to circumstances, obviously changing of head coaches, changing of front office, and unfortunately you become a little bit of a scapegoat. So yes, you are angered, you are upset. If you care, which I do in all cases, all 15 teams I've been with, Charms, I really put my soul into it. And when your heart gets ripped out, it's a tough few days and a tough few weeks.
You do very much wear your heart on your sleeve, TR. And I wonder, when you take a job, a new job, do you ever try and remove yourself from that and take it less personally? Or are you always drawn back to just who you are as a human being and you can't avoid it?
I just can't, Charms. If I do something, I need to do it with 100%, with an incredible amount of emotion and passion. That's maybe why I fall short. I'm so engaged. I'm so, as I said again, passionate about what I do. I care about the people that I work with. I care about the people I brought with me, because a lot of times those become victims as well. And for me to enter a job calculated, with a level of sarcasm, just doing my job, I wouldn't do myself or the organization any justice.
Do you think nowadays for a coach in any professional sporting profession, you have to be political and you have to be less personal? Do you think? Do you have to really play the game more to have longevity in that position?
I think so, Charms. If you look back at the old managers, the Remus Meagles of the world, the Sir Alex Ferguson, guys with great reputation, who were basically judged on their results, and their results were great, obviously. They were liked and loved by the fan base, because if you win, you do. Mm-hmm. But the modern coach is so much different. You talked about social media. You talked about dealing with players that are grown up in a different environment. than most older coaches were. You're dealing with management and the board that are cynical and look for reasons maybe to either get rid of you or make themselves bigger than the franchise, so to speak. So, yes, things have changed. Yes, you're going to be politically correct. Yes, you have to play the game. But I'm able to do that, Sharms, to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But then my own personality still takes over. And I'm maybe different, and that's the reason why maybe I fired. But I, if something goes wrong, Sharms, I can't just sit idle. I need to engage. I need to get involved, even with people that pay my check, so to speak. And that has ruffled some feathers, I'm sure.
But you can go home at night and you can look in the mirror and you can say, okay,
yes,
you know, I'm being true to myself here, right? You're not, like I said, you're not playing the game per se. And that might hurt your career in certain situations, but it's probably the right way to go personally, TR, because, you know, why would you want to go home at night feeling dirty and feeling bad and feeling that, you know, I've been dishonest to myself and, you know, and what I've become? Because you mentioned some of those great managers, Alex Ferguson, Rinus Michels, some of these guys. If those personalities took the helm of clubs nowadays, with that personality, they're not lasting either.
I don't think they will last, because they had some similar traits to myself. Sir Alex could be rude, hard, tough in the boardroom, calling people out. And because of his success and his legacy that he had with Man United, same with Niggas of Barcelona and Ajax and the Dutch national team, they were so big, I can't even put myself in the same class, that people were intimidated. It was through fear that they ruled both on and off the field. You talk to some of the players that played, they were afraid, but they played hard for them because they respected them as well. And that, is, in the end, I think is the most important. I don't want my players to like me. Yeah, I enjoy it if they do, but at least I want to respect me. And most of them did, or all of them did.
You've had good success with young players over the years. You know, you've been responsible for some very, very good US players in particular, getting their chances, their breakthroughs. Do you prefer coaching young players than veterans?
I've done well with both. You know, I won a championship with DC United. You know, did well in MLS with New England. Did well with the Tampa Bay Mutiny. You know, best record overall, with still the highest goal scorer in Roy Lassner in the history of MLS. But yes, I somehow enjoy cultivating, molding certain players and preparing them for the next level. They're vulnerable, they're talented, but they get a lot to learn. And somehow I was able to touch some of those guys, from Freddie Adu to Michael Bradley to Clint Dempsey to the newer breed of Anthony Brooks, Sebastian Leggett, Mr. Wood, that plays his trade in Germany. I'm very happy to say that I've been able to move, because that's ultimately your job, to move some of those players to our senior team in the United States, and even in Toronto with some of those players that we had a hand in developing and then now performing for the first team as well.
Got some tweets, actually. You mentioned Freddie Adu here. At Under the Kosh blog asks, have you worked out yet what's wrong with Freddie Adu? Seriously, like, what is the issue there? And I don't know where he is now, Freddie Adu. He's got a new club this year, but you saw this kid, who we thought was a kid,
right?
You know, 14.
By the way, Sharms, he's with me, or not anymore. He's in Tampa. I brought him to Tampa.
That's right. Yes. My brain froze there. That's right. So what you saw with Freddie Adu when you brought him back, compared to what you thought you had when he was 14 years old, what, fill in the blanks there.
Interesting, because you were very much part of 2007, the Under-20 World Cup, when the U.S. played two games in Toronto, where beat Uruguay in overtime with Cavani and Luis Suarez, but Michael Bradley's 3-2. This great performance of Freddie Adu against Poland, scoring three, setting up Jozy Altidore for two goals when he beat Brazil. And the whole world was talking about this kid, and maybe correctly so. But I think he made the wrong move. Benfica came in with a lot of money. He decided to go there from a very poor family, no father. So I do understand that. But I said to Freddie, because he asked me, coach, what shall I do? I said, Freddie, go to a mid-level team somewhere in Holland or Norway or Scandinavia. Move yourself up, because that's a much better breeding ground to develop yourself. Mm-hmm. Benfica doesn't play, becomes one of 40 players they have on a contract. Gets loaned out three times and never recovered. You know, when he came here, I saw the smile on his face. Again, I'm great that he said that. I'm only here because of you. I'm playing my best football under you. And I allowed him to be a little bit of a free spirit, both on and off the field. I allowed him to make mistakes. I allowed him to be creative, but within the context of the team, he had some defensive responsibilities. But he was a very special player at that age and lost some of that because of his strange journeys in Europe as a young kid, being away from home in tough and hostile environments where back then, and still to a certain extent, American players weren't valued at all. Kicked on training, something he had never encountered. So 6 years later, still with some money in the bank, good for him and his mother. I hope he can resurrect his career. With me not being here, I'm not so sure.
Really? So you think the skill set is still there somewhere within to be a very good player?
Yes, yes. In the short amount of time that he was here, which is about a month, I saw again certain trades. He wasn't fit, but if he gets his fitness back, that could make him again a very valuable player here and a guy that MLS and maybe U.S. national team in a year should look at again.
Right. Interesting. TR, I've got to ask you, what's next for you then? Obviously, you got coaching blood. It's in your veins. At the same time, you're amazing on television. You know that, mate. You're like superb. You're just entertainment personified. It's what, you know, soccer media, sports media has very little entertainment value these days, I think, in many, many ways. And you provide that. What's next for you?
Okay, listen. I'm talking about you're the man of radio in Canada. Brendan Dunlop is the man of TV in Canada in terms of soccer. This man is unbelievable.
Don't tell him that.
Love his haircut. Yeah, that's right. But, Sharm, I can't say who, but I've been in talks with an American company in regards to doing some TV work. I've had some interest from MLS. Wow, that's nice.
Really? Cool.
I think my bow tie has helped me there as well. So there are some offers on the table. I have a little bit of breathing room, which is nice, obviously, financially. So I'm going to sit back, take my time, and take the right job for Thomas Wrong, if it makes sense, where I can love again what I do.
Good man, good man. Listen, the minute you get that new gig, whatever it is, we'll get you back on the show, both podcast and TV, hopefully, okay?
Thanks, Sharp. Sharp, thanks. I really enjoyed the talk here. Good luck, and say hi to all the boys.
We'll do, mate, for sure, for sure. That is Thomas Rungan, the legend, TR, coach, we call him. He is a superb, superb addition to the Sportsnet Soccer Central and Fox Soccer News show we had there for a couple of years ago now, I guess, but TR, a huge personality. And yeah, he won't be out of work for long in what capacity it is, because the game needs him, let's be honest. Almost out of time here. I'm enjoying today's show. We're back, by the way, on Monday with Dunlop and Dobby and myself for the recap of the Premier League weekend. But let me quickly get back to some of these Champions League groups. I mentioned Group D, Group of Death, but there's some pretty intriguing ones. Group A sees PSG with Real Madrid, Shakhtar Donetsk and Malmo. So obviously PSG and Real is the marquee tilt there, but also Zlatan Ibrahimovic, if he's playing at PSG, who the hell knows at this point, will be going back home to Malmo, which would be fun to see. And if you read his biography, he still holds that town with great affection and has some great stories from his time at Malmo. Group B, PSV, Manchester United, CSKA Moscow and Wolfsburg. That's a good group as well. Memphis Depay back to PSV. United, of course, back into the Champions League after a slight hiatus. And as JMO mentioned, there's a pretty, you know what? Now I look at it, it isn't that easy, you know? I mean, PSV's a good team. Wolfsburg's a very good team. Now, whether, what's his name, De Bruyne is going to be there by the time these games come around is will remain to be seen. It's obviously, the rumour is he's on the way to Man City. Late today, before I take this podcast, they said it's pretty much imminent. He'll be joining Man City for an astonishing fee, is what I read. An astonishing fee. So, still, good group. Group C, Benfica, Atletico Madrid, Galatasaray, and Astana, who I'm assuming is making their debut in the Champions League. Skip into Group E now. Barcelona, Bayer Leverkusen, Roma, Bate Borisov. Oh, Bate Borisov, I feel for you. Still, Luis Enrique back with Barca, okay, going back to Roma, where he coached for a season. Group F, it's Good old friends, Bayern Munich and Arsenal, with Olympiacos and Dinamo Zagreb. Bayern and Arsenal meeting for the third time in 4 years. Group G sees Chelsea and Porto again, so some Jose Mourinho narrative there. Dinamo Kiev and Maccabi Tel Aviv. And in Group H, Zenit St. Petersburg, Valencia, Lyon and Ghent. So, yeah, decent groups. I love the Champions League. I love it. I really do. We're not going to get to the Europa League draw just yet. Actually, it may not even happened yet. They're still playing games today, I think. So maybe we'll find out tomorrow. But anyway, there's lots to get to the next few weeks as we preview these matches. Looking ahead to the weekend and Sportsnet, tons of games coming up for you. As always, starting on Friday at 2 p.m. on Sportsnet, Wolfsburg Schalke from the Bundesliga. Maybe De Bruyne's final match for Wolfsburg, if he's even there. On Saturday, the early one at 9:30 sees Liverpool against West Ham on Sportsnet. At the same time on Sportsnet World, it is Man City against Watford. Meanwhile, on Sportsnet World Now, that's online, it's Stoke, West Brom or Villa against Sunderland. The late one on Saturday, noon Eastern in the Premier League, is Spurs, Everton on Sportsnet 1. Half an hour later at 12:30 on Sportsnet World, it's Bayer Leverkusen against Bayern Munich. That should be a great match. And on Sunday, 7:30 in Scottish football for you, it is Rangers, Queen of the South and Sportsnet World. At 9:30, some more German Bundesliga for you. Dortmund, Hertha Berlin. And at 11:30, it is Werder Bremen and Borussia Mönchengladbach, the favourite team for me to pronounce in all of professional sports. Borussia Mönchengladbach of the Champions League, I may add. So that has been today's podcast, Thursday, August 27th. Hope you enjoyed that. Follow me on Twitter at James Sharman. We are back, as mentioned, on Monday for the lesser of the two podcasts, The Three Idiots, myself, Thomas Dobby, and Brendan Dunlop. Cheers for listening, everyone.